This episode of Country Squire Radio is brought to you by Missouri Meerschaum. We thank them for supporting this show, and we thank you for supporting them.
You're listening to Country Squire Radio.
Welcome to Country Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD!
Hey, Bo. Good afternoon, man.
Man, good afternoon to you too, sir. How you doing today?
Oh, man. I'm great. I'm great. It's a hot, sweaty Monday morning or Monday afternoon.
Of course.
You know, what else would you want? Yeah. Well, someone said earlier, I saw a meme. They were like, you want to know what it's like to live in the South? Take a really hot bath. And then immediately put your clothes on without drying off. Yeah.
That is 100% accurate.
As a pipe enthusiast, you know, then you pull out your favorite smoky, smoldery English blend and then put on top of that. And that's what it's like to be a pipe enthusiast in the South. Yeah.
That's right. Actually, I was talking to somebody the other day. I was like, you know, we really shouldn't complain. People spend good money to go to like the spa, the sauna at the spa and everything. Like the sauna.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah.
Like, that's what we did. We step outside, we're already in the sauna for free. So, I mean, you know, there's something.
People pay like $80 a month to join gyms with this kind of stuff, man.
Exactly.
They have tanning beds where they have to, you know, lay in some device that, you know, gives them extra UV rays. And, you know, and then they are part of a gym, which makes them, you know, people like me feel bad about myself. And so, you know, we get all of that complete experience just by stepping outside.
Exactly. It's one of the benefits of the South. You step outside.
That's right, man.
All the luxuries of a high-end gym.
Right, UV there. Rays, sauna, and shame. It's all right there.
It's right there. Yeah. Man, good stuff. Yeah, I know that the summer is in full swing. I don't know, man. School's starting back this coming week, which for those of us with kids, we're kind of gearing up for it. My oldest starts on Wednesday, and then my youngest is still a few weeks out before her Montessori kicks in. But
that's great.
Yeah. In fact, we're meeting the teachers tonight, so that's fun. Yeah, ready for school to start back. Big time ready for school to start back.
It's so funny, man. I know all these photos of parents sending their kids off, and it's like, which one's more excited, the mom or the kid? And I'm pretty sure it's decidedly the parent. So tonight, when you meet the teachers, are you going to slip them a bottle of whiskey or something?
Right. I don't know. It'll be interesting just to kind of get the setup. This will be her first full year. Of course, we did last semester. We kind of moved in the middle of the semester, which was a challenge. We're excited for it, man. We got a lot of stuff going on. I want to make mention of this because as this episode goes out on Wednesday, tonight, as it is, I will actually be giving a podcast chat, kind of leading a podcast chat over at the Black Walnut Cafe on Memorial here in Houston. That's going to be at 8:00 tonight. There is a content creators meetup. And so whether you are a content creator, or you're just kind of interested in podcasting, come on out. It'll be fun, a little chat. And again, that's going to be at the Black Walnut Cafe here in Houston on Memorial at 8 p.m. Would love to meet some of y'all there. That'd be awesome.
Good for you, man. That's great. I'm happy for you. That sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's going to be super laid back. You know, it's not, you know, I've got like a canned class that I've given on podcasting, and I've got my, you know, my TEDx talk in my pocket that I can always go to, but this is going to be like super, super laid back, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. And it's always just great to meet some new folks and see what everybody's got going on. But man, you're going to be meeting perhaps some new folks, perhaps some old folks as you celebrate the 49th anniversary of the Country Squire.
That's right. As this episode comes out on Wednesday, tomorrow, August 15th, 2019, in the year of our Lord, we are celebrating the, the 49th anniversary of the Country Squire. Actually, yesterday, August 11th, as we're recording, was the Country Squire's 49th birthday. But we're having the party on Thursday because people are more likely to hang out then. So really excited. This coming Thursday, 6 to 9 p.m., man, we're just so fired up. STG and Lane Tobaccos are going to be there, have all kinds of bulk tobaccos that we're going to do some buy three, get ones as far as, you know, different ounces goes. The tins will be the same kind of setup. So buy three, get one. Got some door prizes, some giveaways. It's going to be a lot of fun. The cigar guys, of course, are, you know, they've got the big money, right? And so they're bringing some cool stuff as well. So if you're a cigar smoker, you know, that'll be there too. The cigar and pipe folks will be both, if you buy the show deals, will be entered into a contest to win, man, a cigar bar or a tobacco bar. It's kind of amazing. I put some photos of it on our friend face and Insta face and all that other stuff. Man, it's amazing. They've donated a Diesel cigar branded tobacco bar, and it's got a foot rest, and I mean it's a bar.
Yeah, how did that like, you put this on Facebook earlier in the week, man, and I gotta tell you, I was super jealous when I saw this thing. Like, y'all have upped the prize game. Like, y'all were just giving away like half open tins of Orlick Golden Slice and passed it. Now you got fully fresh, like bar humidor type deals. Like,
I leave town
for a few months and this is right. What happens.
and we up the game. No, it's so cool, man. Props to our friends at General Cigar, like throwing an awesome party. Of course, General Cigar now is partnered with Lane Tobacco, Scandinavian Group Tobaccos. I mean, we're talking about Peter Stokeby and Orlick, Balkan Sassini, you know, just so many great brands there on the pipe side, but also the cigar side, Diesel, CAO, Punch, Macanudo, or La Gloria Cubana, some of these, you know, venerated cigar brands. And so, yeah, man, they are bringing in the big guns, donating a tobacco bar for our raffle. It's got a built-in cigar humidor in it. It's crazy. So, yeah, come on. We're going to have, man, live music. Our listener and friend and club member, Cooper Miles, will be there playing, picking and grinning, and have some cold drinks, and it should be a good night.
And it's gonna be a blast. I'm sorry I'm not gonna be there, and I'm still blown away, man. Y'all are putting on a pretty incredible party. You might as well call it the 49th party / make Bo jealous party, because that is certainly a byproduct of this. Well, man, I hope everybody has a great time, and I'll be keeping up on social media to see all the pictures, yeah, and everything. And that's the other thing, man. Normally, whenever we had these events, like I was doing like the live streaming thing, which often got us in trouble because somebody said something they didn't want to say on camera, and then you'd get like an angry email the next day. It's like, oh, I don't want my wife to see that.
Exactly. Our family friendly podcast, you know, and work friendly podcast, sometimes we can't control what people say in our live shows. And so,
I know, right?
You know, and there's characters in the pipe world, and so it makes it a little fun. But anyway, yeah, we're thrilled, man. We will miss you. But anyway, if anyone is in the area, we'd love to have them swing by that night.
And live stream it so I can watch. Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great.
Because you know I'm not going to do it.
No, exactly. Exactly, man. Well, good stuff. You know, we're really excited this week. As we mentioned in previous weeks, we got a Squire Select, which is very appropriate because it's been a minute, man. It's been a minute since we've cracked open the various beverages to enjoy with various pipe tobaccos. But next week, we will also be doing a tobacco talk. So this week, we're doing a Squire Select. Next week, a tobacco talk. Again, we're going to try to maintain this not necessarily tradition per se, but perhaps a practice of keeping y'all informed as to what you can expect around the corner. By the way, let us know. Do you like that? Do you care one way or the other? We want to make sure that we're giving you guys the show that y'all deserve. So let us know if you like kind of knowing what's to come. But anyway, so next week, we got a tobacco talk. But this week, man. Oh, yes. This week, Squire Select. So for those who have never listened to a Squire Select episode in the past, this is where we take various beverages, typically beverages, and we pair them with various pipe tobaccos. Now, you know, we've done things like gin. We've done things like tea. But more often than not, we do like to go with a little bit of the brown water. I'm talking, of course, about whiskeys, scotches, bourbons, various spirits in that category. And today is no exception, man. We are doing it up classic Squire Select with some very, very delicious drinks that I'm looking forward to a sampling and reviewing because the people, man, for the culture, for the people. This is what the pipe community needs right now, is you and me drinking whiskey in the middle of the day and talking about the pipe tobaccos that would go best with them.
And I think when you say what the pipe community needs, what you're really saying is this is what I need on a Monday afternoon when my kids are finally going back to school.
hey, look. I mean, we, in many respects, man, we do our best. We do our part to the community as a whole to represent well, right? We want to represent the pipe community. We want to represent the pipe community back to itself. We want to put on display what, you know, really passionate folks who love the pipes, love the pipe tobaccos, love the community as a whole. Like, this is, you know, so in many respects, yeah. You know what? I think doing it for ourselves is doing it for the community. Self-care, you know, without self-care, you can't do anything. So there you go, man. It's important.
You're basically, you're such a long-suffering person, Bo. I, you know, really, you should... I can sense the pride you have in your humility. It's fantastic.
That's right. My only wish is that I could be even more humble, but
I think
I've already maxed out how humble anybody could be. So.
That's impossible. Yeah. Okay. Well, moving along from your lack of hubris to our delicious whiskeys that we have here today. We've got a couple, and man, I'm excited. I think this will be good. Bo, how about we? And by the way, you know, because Bo and I are now in different locations, this is kind of fun. We have to coordinate this occasionally. But what's great about this particular episode today, Bo and I have not compared each other's thoughts on these two particular whiskeys, and so we're going into this blind. We're going to taste the same ones today, but I have not gotten his thoughts or reactions, and so I'll be really interested to see what they are, and I'll find out with you, the patient listener. So today, the first one we're going to talk about is the Mitchter's Small Batch Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, and it's the Mitchter's U.S. number one. Ooh, I like that little cork pop. That was nice. This is a good whiskey. I think it's really good. This is something I have not tried until I reviewed it for this particular episode, and frankly didn't even know it was available here. Although have seen the label here and there before, but passed it over several times on the bourbon aisle at the local package store, and it's just one of those that I never really tried, I guess, and kind of had forgotten about. But really good stuff. It goes for in our state about $36.99 a bottle. That'll your mileage will vary based on your local excise taxes and all that kind of stuff. But self-proclaimed one of the oldest distilleries in the USA, that is a lot of these whiskey companies, right? What they do is they play up their story, which may or may not be entirely true. And so the Mitchter's name does go way back. I mean, we're talking, mid 18th century, the 1750s here. Lots of legacy there with the name. The distillery itself was a it was in Pennsylvania and then was defunct for a while. And now the name is associated with the distillery that's located in Louisville, Kentucky. And so that's where this is produced. And this particular brand is more probably famous for their rye whiskeys, the ryes that they put out that are very, very high quality from what I understand. I've never had them. But if you hear people talking about Mitchter's, you will probably be more prone to be familiar. They are more likely to be mentioning their rye products. So a good product, kind of a upper mid range price, or kind of beginning that premium price point there. The distiller for years was a man named Willie Pratt, who was in the business for a very long time. He was known as Dr. No because really? he would constantly tell his employees that his whiskey was not ready to go out. And so
Dr. No.
Yeah, it's just not good enough yet. It's not good enough yet. And that perfectionism, I think, really, just helped their product, continue to improve over time. And so today the master distiller is Pam Heilman. She works occasionally with distiller emeritus Willie Pratt. And so this truly is a small batch whiskey. They market themselves as that. It says small batch whiskey on the bottle, but when we're talking small batch, we're talking 20 to 25 barrels at a time. Which is very, that's a craft, that's an artisan product, that's an artisanal, whiskey that we're talking here. So aged at least 8 years, if you're someone that hasn't had a lot of super premium whiskeys but want to branch out into something, a little more high end, this would be a good approachable step for you, I think.
That's a really good way to put it, John David. Yeah.
Is that a good way to put it? Yeah.
I'll
be interested once we sip it here in a second to get Bo's feedback on it a little more. But this is a very approachable whiskey. It's complex, lots of flavor, but the superlatives are not so You know, they're not so pigeonholed where you can't just approach this from a lot of different palate backgrounds. I just think it's a good gateway whiskey. It might be the Throgmorton Cellar to English blends, ooh, as this is to premium whiskeys here, right? Ooh. Now, I'm not pairing this with Throgmorton today.
I was about to say about
number one, I know, right? Number one, that would be cruel because you can't get it anymore. Number two, we've paired things with the Frog before. But yeah, so anyway, let's you want to take a little sip?
Yeah, let's.
Wait, I tell you what, you want to describe just the bottle and then also the color of the whiskey?
Yeah, and actually, you know what? Let me mention this too. Like, so Michter's actually came on my radar very, very recently. As I was watching Netflix's, I think this is season 3 of Jessica Jones, which is the last of the Marvel Netflix series. Now, I know, John David, you don't know what Marvel is. They are Hollywood yet now, and yet you don't know who they are. And that's fine. That's fine.
All I hear was Netflix, and then I heard wah 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 Gumby wah wah wah. Right.
Well, anyway, so Marvel, the Marvel heroes, they had their kind of the Netflix series, which was connected to the movies, but only slightly. And now it may seem like they might not be connected at all. But the last of the deal that Marvel had with Netflix, the last of the series they were putting out was season 3 of Jessica Jones. Now, Jessica Jones is a private eye, but she is a superhero, even though she does not want to be a superhero. So she has all these super abilities, but she doesn't wear a costume. She doesn't even like using her super abilities. And yet she goes and kind of, solves all these mysteries and murders and that sort of thing. And as a private investigator, she is also in kind of that classic noir style, a hard drinking detective. Like, so she is constantly just pounding the bourbon. And because she is, you know, a superhero, she also has like the super, super tolerance to alcohol. So,
yeah.
So it takes that archetype of the hard drinking detective to the next level because she is always drinking it. And so interestingly enough, this last past season, I don't know if they've done this in the previous seasons, but she was always, always drinking Michter's, and yet you never saw their logo. You never saw their name. It was one of the situations where the bottle was always turned to let you know they didn't get the rights or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
really?
Maybe they were trying to get them to sponsor the series, and at the end they couldn't get the sponsorship, so they just turned all the bottles to the side or something. But because of the iconic nature of the bottle, it's easy to pick out. For one thing, as I was watching it, even though I didn't know the name of the brand, I know that I'd seen the bottle before because you have that kind of that oval that is on the front of the bottle, that it's kind of got that texture, might be the wrong word. It's a little bit of like a, it's not a perfect oval. It's a little rough. It's a little
rough around the edges, literally.
Yeah. And so in that, you've got kind of the iconography that's right in the center with kind of, very stamped on. You mentioned the early origins of the distillery. They even say specifically on their label, distilled in small batches according to Michter's pre-Revolutionary War quality standards dating back to 1753. And so beautiful bottle, tall, and with the star wrap on the top as well. And as you mentioned, it's got the number, really truly a small batch. It's got the batch number right there on the top of the bottle as well. So I've already poured mine, but I fought off the urge. So now we get to drink it.
All right, cheers. This is good whiskey. This is one of those where I think, you know, for those of us that are more everyday men, you know, aren't constantly buying $40, $50, $60 bottles of whiskey all the time. When you pop a cork on this, you know, okay, I've just opened a premium product. That's kind of my experience here. What do you think? First impressions?
Yeah, so you can kind of tell that Michter's cut their teeth with rye because there is very much a distinct kind of that rye spice kick that you get with this. It's not lost, but at the same time, it is a very smooth bourbon. I love, you know, I hadn't thought about it from that way before, John David, but I loved how you pointed out like this might be kind of your gateway into kind of some more premium or some more small batch type bourbons out there, because while it is, it's got some complexity to it, it's not overly complex, right? It's something
that
anybody could pick it up and drink it and think, man, that's a good bourbon. That's a good whiskey. But it also, it's done in such a way that it does have that kind of rye highlighted in the experience. And honestly, it's just good. Like it's really good. Kind of like, you know, cabinet bourbon, to be honest. I mean, like, I don't mean like it's pushing on the higher end, but it's a little bit on the lower side of the higher end. So it's like right up my wheelhouse. This might be exactly. my new go-to, honestly.
I completely agree. The caramel notes of it remind you of some of those sweeter bourbons that are out there. But, you know, it kind of, as you swallow and then throughout the experience, you've got that dried fruit that kind of comes in. And then what I find, I'll be interested to see if Bo catches this, but there's a pepper finish on this whiskey that I think is very fascinating. It's not overpowering. It's just a nice peppery finish that lingers. It's very much a note that lingers on your palate. It's very subtle. It's really, really nice. And so another thing too, if you're not one of those people that drinks their whiskey neat, if you have always put it on ice or heaven forbid mixed it with something, this would be the whiskey that you may want to try neat. This may be a good gateway whiskey to just drinking straight. Just a really good, sipping whiskey just by itself. Super smooth, but also good on the rocks as well. So,
it's fast becoming like one of my top three. You know, Buffalo Trace is still very, very high up there for me. And then, you know, Old Soul from Jackson's Cathead Distillery is probably, I mean, like, honestly, that might it's have so the number good. One slot just because of the home field advantage. But it is, if not number one, it is a very close number two. And this one has kind of found its way into kind of my number three spot. And that's not to say that it's low at all. Like, that is, you know, that's amongst all whiskey, all bourbons. So I enjoy it quite a bit.
Yeah. Well, man, as far as the pipe tobacco pairing that we have today, I think this pairs really well with this particular one. So we're going with Rattray's Marlin Flake.
Rattray's, interesting. Of course, okay.
Rattray's, of course, been around a long time. It, in more recent years, has been kind of difficult to get your hands on. But, the shipments of Rattray's are regular. It's just not something that you can get necessarily at will anytime you want. You may have to wait, you know, a few weeks before your favorite tobacconist gets their hands on some. But Marlin Flake is great. There's a mellow, natural sweetness to this particular tobacco. It does have a noticeable Virginia tanginess that's not, again, not overpowering. It, I think, matches well with the, natural sweetness of the mixtures. But then it also has enough barrique to give it that peppery finish. So we're really complimenting and not overpowering or anything the bourbon itself. As all Rattray's, you know, Virginias are to me, they are sipping tobaccos. They're tobaccos that you're going to want to smoke slowly and intentionally. And I think that's the best way also to enjoy the mixtures as well. And so as you're kind of going back and forth, swapping your pipe for a sip of, this delicious, bourbon, going back and forth, I think it's going to pair really, really nicely. And I'll be interested if you had the chance to tell me what you think.
All right, man. That's it's a good pairing right there. Yeah, I had not. This sounds terrible, man. But Rattray's is not normally like on my radar. I mean, like, it's not. Yeah. You know, when I kind of think about, again, not to give like a top three list here, although at some point, actually, that might be an interesting episode, us to give like our top three pipe tobaccos that like that are kind of in our go to. But like, no, Rattray's is not currently part of my rotation. But maybe, I don't know, maybe I need to switch that up. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about Squire Selects is it can force you to expand your palate. If your love of one thing, pairs well and nicely with a different pipe tobacco that don't normally smoke all that much, it's like, oh, you know what? Now I got an excuse to.
That's exactly right. I think that's the thing. And the beauty of this is it forces the listener to maybe reconnect with, tobaccos that they have forgotten about or ones that they weren't aware of. You know, in Rattray's, it's not particularly known for its aromatic tobaccos. They've only got a few, and they're not particularly well known. These are more Virginia forward tobaccos, English blends, tobaccos that are a little more maybe sophisticated in their leaf choices, but they do occasionally have some flavorings, and I think are really tasty. You know, so if you can get your hands on some, they're excellent tobaccos in their own right, but I think pair really well with the mixtures today.
That's good, man. All right, so next up, we've got 1835 Bourbon Whiskey.
Yeah, now I'm interested to see, Bo, what your thoughts are on this particular one. Again, we have not discussed this beforehand at all, so I'll be really, really interested to see. This is a 90-proof whiskey bottled in Texas. 1835 was the year of the first Battle of Texas, where the independence was declared, and actually it goes also by Lone Star 1835 bourbon, and it doesn't say Lone Star on the bottle, but at the very top of the whiskey there is the iconic Texas Lone Star there that you always associate with the state. 1835 bourbon. It also says come and take it, which I love. Of course, that's a Texas thing.
Texas mindset right there, right?
That's right. 1835, a flag was hoisted at this battle with a cannon on it that says come and take it, basically daring the opponents to come get them. And of course, this flag, this come and take it flag is still, yeah, exactly. And it's still very much kind of iconic in Texas lore. And if you've been to the state and hunted around some of those Texas gift shops and things like that,
where,
you know, folks are, you know, selling armadillos and all that kind of stuff, I'm sure you've seen it, but really iconic and a good story behind, behind that. But,
This is something I did not realize when we bought our house, but our neighborhood has a rule that you cannot fly any flag except for the Texas flag.
That does not surprise me.
Can you believe that? That's crazy. That's crazy.
That does not surprise me. Yeah. I mean, you know, leave your Texas Longhorns, your Texas A&M flags, your, you know, like Mississippi State, LSU flags, leave those at home. But if it's the Texas flag, that's welcome. Yeah.
And almost required. Like we don't currently have one, although I do have Texas flag pillows, which I think I mentioned that on here. Like I was trying not to be like, you know, that guy. And then we literally couldn't find any outdoor pillows beyond those that were the Texas flag pillows. And so it was like, all right, let me get two of these.
I mean, what you have to be comfortable. So, you know, no, that's good. They're, you know, that kind of iconography is, you know, prolific.
Iconography.
Iconography is prolific, obviously, through the state of Texas. And so this is a smaller company. It's a Texas-based company. This is if you don't live, you know, in the state of Texas, you probably will not find this particular whiskey. To be honest with you, there's not a lot of information about it. It's pretty pretty unassuming. You know, I think in some sense it was an attempt for this particular distillery, the North Texas Distillery, to kind of take advantage of that Texas pride, right? And so it's one of those things that's going to be more locally based, and interest, I think, will be more local. But Bo, you want to describe the bottle?
Yeah, man. So as you say, it does have that Texas iconography, kind of right front and center with a big cannon right in front of you. The 1835 is done in kind of a calligraphic kind of way. So it was almost like it was written right there with that come and take it, not just in, you know, like Times New Roman. I mean, this is done with kind of that calligraphy style and exclamation point right there at the end. The bottle itself, I'm not sure what the shape is considered, but it's almost that kind of wide medicinal shape in terms of, you know, if you kind of go into an old pharmacy, you might see the kind of these larger bottles or even like a mouthwash, kind of like a very, very nice mouthwash type of thing.
Like a Listerine bottle. Yeah.
Yeah. And it is interesting because one of the biggest adjustments to moving to Houston has been, you know, the fact there is so much here, like there's so many more options. There's so much more going on. And for somebody who, you know, born and raised in Mississippi for the vast majority of my life, you know, options are can be overwhelming. So I went down to the package store here called Specs, and they have got like a wall.
If you live in Texas, you know what Specs is.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Exactly. And they've got like walls and walls of bourbon. Like, you know, back home we got a couple shelves and they, you know, some nice long shelves that go up to about your waist, and you've got some great bourbons and the selection is wonderful. And here it's like that, except, you know, instead of going up to your waist, it goes up to the ceiling. And instead of like, you know, a couple of shelves, it's like a couple of walls. And so I go in to try to like expand my bourbon knowledge. And to some extent, it's like a kid in the candy store. And to some extent, it's like, I don't even know where to begin. Maybe I should just get what I like.
Exactly. You're like, which one's pretty? Yeah,
exactly. So this one did kind of stand out because it does have that very, you know, hey, this is Texas, you know, come and take it. Like there's an attitude to this. But at the same time, not an attitude in the abrasive sense, an attitude in the sense that, like, this knows what it is, at least in terms of a marketing standpoint. It knows what it's trying to be. It knows what it's trying to communicate. And even though it does have that kind of bold, you know, don't mess with Texas mindset, it also has a certain class to it. There's a classiness to the bottle. There's a classiness to the brand. It stood out to me. I picked it up. And I'm standing here. I will say this. I mean, we haven't tasted it yet. We're about to talk about it. But despite anything I'm about to say, I'm standing here with almost a completely empty bottle. So I want to start. I'll start with that before we actually talk about.
I'll start. I agree. Yes. All right. Let's take a sip.
Cheers.
So I'll start and then let you talk. This is not a superlative whiskey. Right. I mean, this is, again, this knows what it is. It's a it's approachable. You know, it's a good mixer. You know, it's not particularly distinctive. It's it has a nice, kind of tongue coating on it. But, you know, there is a medicinal flavor to it. And, you know, after that, it just kind of settles. I don't really get a whole lot from it. You know, it's not not particularly interesting, if you ask me. You know, it's one of those whiskeys that you're like, man, if you want to be drinking whiskey, you know, I think, you know, and don't really have a, maybe have a very mild or sensitive palate, this might be a good one for you. But yeah, I don't know, Bo, I just don't really get a lot from this. What do you think?
No, you're exactly right. I mean, this does have almost kind of that, kind of that wheat nature to it, that kind of thin nature to it. I mean, that's the only thin way I know how to describe that flavor profile from a textural standpoint. I got this, as I mentioned, that the branding stood out to me. I wanted to pick it up from that standpoint. And, you know, I feel like, you know, I correct me if I'm wrong, but we've had Lone Star actually send us some bourbons before. Is that correct?
If I'm remembering right, we haven't had anything from this particular brand, but maybe from this distillery. Yeah, I'm not sure, to be honest.
Well, so, you know, and I'm the thing is, and this is gonna rub some people the wrong way, like my neighbors. I feel like Texas has been trying in the bourbon department for a while, and I know there are some great distillers that are in the area that are. You know, doing their best, but I don't know. I don't know if it's a mental thing or what. I think maybe in trying too hard, it comes across as too weak. And I think that there is something to be said for a lot of the Texas bourbon culture of the Texan distillers here. Now, I am very ready to be proven wrong. Like, if you're like, hey, now listen, you know, look,
you also better be ready to run.
No. Don't fire your guns. Fire the bourbon. Send on the bourbon over. I will try it. I will test it. Show me, you know, what has. And actually, you know what, Matt? I should mention this. I was at a 4th of July party very recently. And the guy, he grew up in Dallas and was kind of hosting us. And he had a few bourbons on hand. And the one that I had was from a Texas distiller. It was very, very good. I can't remember what it was. So I need to get that from him. Maybe we'll do that next time. But in general, every single time I feel like I've gone to like the Texan bourbon well, I've been underwhelmed, not disappointed, not disgusted, just underwhelmed. And you can tell that they're trying, but I don't know, man. Like you say, there is kind of a, well, this is alcohol and, you know, it's got that nice, you know, it's got the burn. So, you know, that's
right. You know, you're drinking something that was probably distilled, right?
Exactly. It's there. But like there's really no, the bourbon flavor isn't there, or if it is, it's just very watered down, which is unfortunate. But
I think you nailed it. This is you know, this is a whiskey for something someone that it maybe doesn't know a lot about whiskeys and is looking for something that, hey, this is a you know, a good mixer or something that I can just share with a lot of people to not really worry about. Maybe you know, it is smoother than the, like a Jack Daniels or something of that nature. The price point is a little higher. We're talking like mid-20s, 28 to 30, something like that. But, you know, I do. I think they, are taking advantage of kind of the Texas name and you know, kitschiness that you got there. I'll differ with you some. I have been pretty impressed with a lot of the Texas whiskeys that I've had.
there you go. You're saving us. The Texas listeners.
I'm bailing you out, right? No, I mean, all honesty, I mean, they're different. Most of them are different. They're not, you know, the flavor profiles in some ways. I wouldn't, you know, you've got them aged in sherry casks and using, you know, different kinds of ingredients and all this. So I feel like they're pushing the envelope. So they're different, you know, tasting whiskeys, but they are distinctive. And I for the most part, have been very, very impressed with them. You know, but this particular one, I was left, like you, pretty underwhelmed, you know, again, because this is, at the price point it is, it's approachable. You know, they have, had a lot of success, I think, based on their branding. And so they've also come out with a lot of different, flavor varieties of this, which, you know, this kind of happens when, whiskeys, you know, are at this price point and catch on a little bit. So now you can get, you know, this particular one with, you know, all kinds of crazy flavors and that type of thing.
Right,
which,
right.
You know, what comes to mind is like a Burnett's vodka, which is kind of like, you know, the bottom shelf, you know, and they've got all these crazy flavors. And yeah. So, you know, they've gone in that direction, and I think that's fair. But yeah, this is, you know, this is not a particularly premium product, which is fine.
And
yeah.
How did you say that you came upon it?
All right. So this is interesting. it's funny. This particular bourbon is not, it's not, you know, distributed in Mississippi. Well, as you know, longtime listeners might remember, back in 2015, my grandfather passed away. And I went down to a couple months later down to his house in Katy, Texas, down there to, you know, kind of we were cleaning his house up and packing stuff up and sending things to the thrift store and things like that, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And so he had one bottle of whiskey left in his liquor cabinet. And actually, Papa had an entire bar. It was really one of these old 1980s houses, just early McMansion kind of thing. But it was a nice house. And he had this little wet bar in there that I always remember growing up very fondly. I would go back there as a little kid and pretend that I was a bartender and that kind of thing. You know, it was a neat little area of his house. And so I went back there just kind of reminiscing and, you know, missing my papa. And he had one bottle of whiskey left, and it was this 1835. And so this is the same bottle that I'm actually drinking from today. Pretty cool. It's about a fourth full, about a quarter full. I only sip on it on, you know, occasions when I'm kind of thinking about him or reminiscing about old times, that kind of thing. But I was very close to my grandfather. He was quite a man, and we've talked about him some before on the show. You know, D-Day veteran, one of those that just larger than life kind of guys, and you know, self-made man and all that. But anyway, this was his last whiskey, and he had obviously enjoyed almost the entire bottle, but had some left, and I always like to think saved it for me. And so, so that's what that is. And, you know, it's funny, it's not particularly great whiskey.
Well, but, I mean, like, you got that really ancient not. Bottle of Old Charter in the shop for like, for the exact same reasons, you know what I mean? Like, there is something to be said about the previous generation, and, you know, there's, you know, well, okay. So every generation brings something to the picture, right? And as much as the previous generation, or at least that specific generation, brought to the picture, quality whiskey wasn't it. You know, they had what they had and they enjoyed what they got. And it's funny lot of these, you know, brands will really kind of tote the fact they've been around forever. But honestly, that's not necessarily always a plus. But the thing that makes it, and this is true, I think, of a lot of, you know, even a lot of like hamster tobaccos as well, is that, you know, we associate that particular brand, that particular whiskey, that particular pipe tobacco, that particular smell, that particular taste with the people that we love and the people that made an impact on us. And so regardless of, you know, whether or not it's, you know, Captain Black or, you know, 1835, it may hold a special place because it does connect us, you know, with the ones that we loved and the ones that set us on the path we're on today.
That's exactly right. So, so, you know, it's cool for me, but, you know, if you're one of those people that love a, you know, real high quality whiskey, you know, something that's interesting and lots of nuanced flavors and all that kind of stuff, You know, you may want to steer clear. And so segueing from that into the tobacco pairing, this should be interesting.
You,
did, right?
You didn't pair it with Captain Black, did you?
I didn't. Yeah, or Captain Black Grape or something like that. Yeah. No, I paired it with a really good aromatic. I paired it with a respectable aromatic that, this is I kind of feel like, if you're sipping this particular whiskey, you need the tobacco to take over. You really do. It's not something that, you're really going to complement as much as just kind of, the whiskey and the sipping part might, just be the sensory thing. Like you said, like, oh, I'm drinking alcohol and this is fun. And I'm also going to smoke my pipe, right? And so the tobacco we paired it with, of course, is a very popular aromatic. It's Autumn Evening from Cornell and Deal. And Autumn Evening, I feel like this is a good pairing because it kind of rounds out what a lot of the 1835 is missing. It's kind of the malty, mapley, sweet, oaky that's there. It's bringing those things to the table that I think the 1835 is kind of missing, to be honest with you. Again, this is probably a pretty good mixing whiskey. It would be on the higher end of a whiskey that you would want to mix. I will say that, if you're going to mix this whiskey, that's on the higher end of blending, whiskeys you're going to make a cocktail out of kind of thing. I would think anyway. Or at least a whiskey and Coke or something like that. So the Autumn Evening, it's one of those that when you open it, it's going to be relatively moist and will take a little time to dry out. Some people let it dry out some and before they load up their pipe full. But once you do that, I think it's good and let it kind of simmer there at first. It'll dry out as you smoke it and then be a good burner after that. Makes the room smell great too. So that's it.
Well, great pairings. The great thing is, like, I was really excited about these whiskeys because I had feelings that, like, and this is always the truth with Squire Select. There's always great stories that comes out, right? There's always the great.
Yeah, that's right.
Stories that are connected with them or with the pipe tobacco that's paired. But, the best thing I think that any of us can do when we think about a story and kind of enjoying a story together, it's enjoying a story over a great quality whiskey and also a great quality smoke, like the kind of smoke you can get from the pipes from our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
That's exactly right, man. Of course, these whiskeys have a story, but as we all know, Missouri Meerschaum has a story as well. And this is their 150th anniversary. It's pretty cool. Our very own Liz Stevie, who works at the Country Squire, she does a lot of our mail order stuff. She is on her honeymoon right now. She actually gets back tomorrow. She got married and to her longtime boyfriend, and we were really excited for her. But on her honeymoon, her cross country trip, they went through Washington, Missouri, and went to the really cool facility that they've got there. Their ancient factory with their beautiful museum section where they've got all this memorabilia from 150 years of the best corncob pipes on earth. And so, man, we encourage you, if you are in that part of the world and want to make a different kind of pipe pilgrimage, a corncob pipe pilgrimage, swing by Washington, Missouri, go see the folks at Missouri Meerschaum. And, man, they will all take good care of you. Becca, Marilyn, Phil, just the entire crew up there will be so happy to see you. And today we're going to talk again about the Great Dane corncob pipe from Missouri Meerschaum. It comes in two different varieties, the spindle and the spool. These are larger Missouri Meerschaum corncob pipes. They fit your hand really well. They have kind of a curvature to them that are very, very comfortable in your hand, and just a larger filtered pipe, which gives you the option of that cooler smoke. And so, an excellent pipe. Retails for only $12.59 and comes in a bent and a straight variety. So check it out. If you have a Great Dane spool or a Great Dane spindle, we encourage you to smoke it and let us know.
And yeah, of course, if you are smoking a Great Dane, be sure to take a picture of yourself doing so. We love to retweet those pictures out to let the good folks at Missouri Meerschaum know. We appreciate them for sponsoring this show.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week coming in from Ryan Smith. Ryan asking a very important question for those in Ryan's situation. What are the different steps that I should take in cleaning and caring for a reverse calabash pipe? Now, reverse calabash pipe, a very iconic looking pipe, something that many may have in their collection, and some may be too intimidated to get, to be honest. I've got one. Do you have one in your collection?
A reverse calabash pipe, I don't have. I actually don't have a calabash pipe either, to be honest with you. But they both are iconic in their own right. The reverse calabash, you've got a bowl, right? Let me start. For those that might not be familiar, a regular calabash has the it's typically made out of gourd, but the gourd bent pipe, we always think of Sherlock Holmes, even though Sherlock Holmes didn't technically smoke a calabash pipe. And it has the meerschaum insert that functions as the bowl there. And so the bowl is on the top. It's got this big void inside the gourd or other wood. And then it allows that big void allows the smoke to cool before it gets to your tongue, and therefore has this light, airy smoke. It's a very fun pipe to smoke, although it's not particularly practical because they are so big and kind of bulky. A reverse calabash pipe typically is made of briar, and it's not going to have that meerschaum lining. It's not going to have the kind of case that sets down on top of the cooling chamber. It's going to be typically a normal-ish briar bowl, but then it'll have a larger chamber back behind that the smoke will have to pass through in order to get to your mouth. And so that's why some reverse calabash pipes kind of look like a peanut. Because you have a normal bowl, and then it kind of tapers down, and then it goes into this larger bulb where the tobacco will, or the smoke will have an opportunity to cool before it gets to your tongue. So they both work the exact same way, essentially. It's just one is more kind of compact, the reverse calabash kind of compact, typically made of briar, and it gives the smoke the opportunity to cool down just in a kind of a different format. So as far as caring for these pipes, cleaning them, the bowl itself, you'll take care of like you would any other pipe. You'll want to occasionally ream it, swab it out really good with a pipe cleaner, keep moisture out of it, that kind of thing. You're going to do the same thing with the cooling chamber, I guess we'll call it, there on the end. With this, you're not reaming it, obviously. You don't want to let any, the cake is not going to build up in that part of the pipe, and so you don't want it, to ream that out. The only thing you do want to do is be careful of moisture. You really want to check out, make sure, moisture doesn't settle in there, especially when you're storing this pipe. After each smoke, a lot of reverse calabashes are designed where you can take them apart when they're hot. Some are not. If they're not, let them cool down. Take it apart, and then once it is cool, and then take your pipe cleaner and swab out the inside of that cooling chamber really, really good. And that's going to allow the pipe to be good and dry, so when you do set it back, you won't have to worry about it one bit. So again, you're not going to ream that section, but it is prone to get quite a bit of moisture in it because that's where your smoke is cooling. And so just scrub it out really good, and then of course you'll scrub out the inside of your stem as well. So it's really easy, just takes basically one extra step, and other than that, I think you'll be good to go.
All right, man. Well, great question from Ryan. Thank you so much for that. And hey, if you got a pipe question, be sure to send it in. show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that's show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quick fire question, Jones. All right, man. Quick fire questions coming in. Of course, brought to us by the shirts available to you at thecountrysquireonline.com. Represent the Country Squire Radio by getting a Country Squire Radio shirt at thecountrysquireonline.com. All right, man. I like that. Brian Levine. This is a guy who wrote in with some questions. Let's see what Brian Levine has to say. We're actually continuing on some of his questions from last week where he was trying to get us in trouble with our wives. So we're continuing as we choose the ladies. All right. This is actually, I find this to be relatively inappropriate given our age context, But I think when Brian was younger, maybe Supergirl was older. Right now, Supergirl is a young, like a child. So it doesn't. All right. So Catwoman or Supergirl?
I don't even know what a Supergirl looks like. I mean, my wife is a Supergirl, but as far as a cartoon character, comic book character, I have no idea. I do know who Catwoman is. For a variety of reasons, I'll go with Catwoman.
So Supergirl, just a little context. She is Clark Kent, Kal-El of Krypton, Superman. She's Superman's cousin. And so the idea was that she was sent to Earth in kind of a way to, she was supposed to like care for Clark, baby Superman. And but her ship got like stuck or frozen or went off course. And she was kind of caught in suspended animation so that by the time she lands on Earth, Clark Kent has already grown up and or Kal-El has grown up and become Superman. And so now her younger cousin is actually much older than her. And so she ends up kind of being a pseudo sidekick to Superman. But she also definitely is kind of her own hero in her own light. And actually, I say, you know, in the comics, at least our comic book version of Supergirl is very much like a child. But I guess the Supergirl that's on the CW is much older. So I'm gonna say Catwoman. I Supergirl's great. You know, you get this Selina Kyle. You got a little bit of a little wild streak. You gotta go for this.
That's good.
And then finally, for the last of Brian's, Wilma Flintstone or Betty Rubble?
I guess I'll go with Wilma Flintstone, huh? I mean, you know, she's more the main character, kind of. You know, she's got that, you know, those stone pearl things around her neck, and
they both do.
Always,
they both do.
Yeah, I guess they do. I don't know. I mean, yeah, we'll go with Wilma. I mean, she, you know, she's right there with Fred.
A redhead thing? Is that why?
I you know, you and Brian both are going to try to coax me into all kinds of trouble with various women in my life, and I'm just going to leave it at Wilma Flintstone.
Yeah. You know, I'm actually kind of surprised, man. As a you know, former and to some extent current therapist. Wilma and Fred had some issues. That was not a healthy marriage. Like there's some stuff there.
I think there's a lot probably unhealthy about the Flintstones. You know, they're like running on the streets to make your car go and eating giant slabs of the side of dinosaurs and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I don't know, man. There's a lot happening.
this is true. No, between the two, probably Betty. I don't know, man. It's difficult. I'd be curious what Wilma would be like. What was single Wilma like? You know, like what was Wilma before Fred like? And like I feel like Fred and Wilma are very like it's not a good marriage. It's not a good thing going on. They weren't right for each other. I mean, they're making it work for Bam Bam or not Bam Bam, Pebbles, right? Pebbles is their kid.
I it's lost on me.
I think it's Pebbles. I think Bam Bam is actually Betty and what's his sidekick's name?
Fred. Yeah, you know, Fred.
That guy, Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble. Barney. So
right.
So Barney
is her husband.
Right. Barney and Betty, Fred and Wilma. I probably go a little bit more Betty. Probably go a little bit more Betty.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
And since we're gonna throw one additional in here to round it out a little bit. And I think I will get you in trouble.
It wouldn't be the first time.
And you know what? I'm gonna throw one. I'm gonna throw an extra one in here because I did the math wrong, and we really need three to call it a successful quickfire question. So I'm gonna go with Julie Andrews or Audrey Hepburn.
Ooh. Okay. Julie Andrews or Audrey Hepburn?
Like back in the day, you know. I mean, like, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair.
Because right, she got it going. Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, that's funny.
Listen, you go back and you watch classic Mary Poppins and you're like, oh, okay, all right. You know, like when you're a kid, she's like an older woman. But like when you're our age now, you're like, dang, girl.
Oh, man, that is out of control. You know, I'll probably go with Audrey Hepburn. Yeah. I mean, Julie Andrews, you know, loved The Sound of Music and all that. But
yeah.
Yeah, I'll go with Audrey Hepburn.
Well, I mean, in terms of, honestly, both these women are incredible in terms of talent. Man, I, you know what, when I kind of pulled this one out of thin air, I didn't realize actually how difficult this was going to be. Cause you're right. Man. Oof. I'm going to go Audrey Hepburn just cause there's a classic Hollywood like aura around kind of who she represents in kind of filmography from that standpoint. But again, you're about to find this out as a dad when you start going back and rewatching some of the movies from your youth. You're like, you know, that old woman that you saw when you were a kid is like now younger than you are now. And you're like, okay, all right. What's up, Julie?
It's a strange feeling, but I know. I mean, you know, we all are familiar with what
it's the craziness. It is. It's crazy. Anyway, yeah. So Audrey Hepburn as well. But anyway, shout out to Brian Levine for trying to get us in trouble with our wives, and shout out to me for also trying to get us in trouble with our wives. Hey, if you got quick fire questions, be sure to send them in. show@countrysquireradio.com. Again, that is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts. Your comments. Listener feedback.
All right, man. Listener feedback. And I tell you what, we are going to probably just do one for time's sake. Listener feedback here. This one's in, man, from Ryan Tulloch. He says, great show again, guys. I hate to hear of Bruce's passing. Of course, this is our most recent episode that we did last week. But if there is a silver lining, I'm glad to know the difference between rusticated and sandblasting. I've been smoking pipes for years now, but never knew the difference, or at the very least thought they were two names that meant the same thing. That probably makes me sound ignorant, but that's why I love listening to the show, not to feel ignorant, but to learn things about my favorite hobby. Keep the smoke rolling. And again, that is from Ryan Tulloch. And let me just say this, Ryan, like, honestly, like, even in the early days of Country Squire Radio, that was me. Like, I did not know the difference between rustication and sandblasting. John David was actively, like, educating me in front of everybody, it still wasn't quite ringing clear. I thought in some way they were, like, taking some sort of, like, almost like a laser pointer-like approach to sandblasting to get the rustication or something of that nature. Like, it just was not registering with me at all. So you are not alone, and I'm sure it's not just the two of us either.
Yeah, that's one of those things that your ability to kind of determine the difference between those, man, we're glad to play a little part in that. And of course, one of the best sandblasters in history, of course, was Bruce Weaver. And it's been neat to see folks over the past week, appreciate that and pull out those sandblasted pipes and really reintroduce themselves to that art form. So anyway, thanks for the comments. Great to have you on board, and we're so glad you're with us.
You know, I'll pull the curtain back just a slight bit here, and with last week's episode, you know, generally we record these episodes, we talk about whatever topic it is we're talking about, and I then have the task of trying to figure out how to market the episode, right? Like, it needs a name, it needs a title. And, you know, with our series, like, for example, Squire Select this week and Tobacco Talk next week, like, those are canned situations. Like, here's the name of the series, here's the thing that we're discussing, and you call it a day. But when it's something that's topical, generally we like to give it kind of a funny spin, or we like to do some form of alliteration. And of course, the subject matter is crucial in terms of, you know, especially the educating the listener base. We try to do that as much as possible every single episode to some extent. There's an important aspect of that you know what you're getting into, but this was very much a dedication. And we've done episodes, on very rare occasion, we've done similar episodes in the past, but we have. And so, you know, I was like, how best do we communicate that we're talking about sandblasting, but we're also kind of dedicating this to Bruce? And so that's when it kind of just kind of hit me as I was sitting there reflecting on, you know, the craft and everything that we discussed and what he brought to the industry. And I was like, the Weaver Way, that needs to be what this episode is called.
And that was a nice touch, Bo. I was really glad we could do that in his honor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for writing that in. And hey, if you've got some feedback, be sure to send it in. show@countrysquireradio.com is the place to do it. Also, you can follow us on Twitter @SquireRadio, or you can follow me. I'm @TheRealBoYork.
I'm @JohnDavidCole, or you can get us at the shop @_CountrySquire.
Of course, all that information and more can be found at CountrySquireRadio.com. Well, John David, hey, day drinking. Here's the day. I mean,
I know, right, man? Yeah, that's exactly right. This has been good. It's been good stuff. It's been good to not just get back behind the mic, but also get back behind the bottle.
That's right. Look. I mean, you know, there's not very many professions where you can drink in the middle of the day and call it work.
No, I know, right? Yeah, so we should really take advantage of this. Every time I want to complain about work, I think, I get to do this for a living. This is not a real job.
That's right. This your job is to do the thing that people do when they're trying to get away from their job.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Very blessed.
No, man, I had fun. Good hanging out again today.
Absolutely, brother. Well, hey, let's go have a day.
See you, buddy.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.